We come to the second paritta, which is called Ratana Sutta or Ratana Paritta. Now, Ratana means a jewel or a gem. And here, Ratana means things that are precious, like jewels. And this soda is a real soda for recitation, a real soda for chanting. Because in this soda, the good qualities or the admirable qualities of the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha are mentioned. And at the end of each verse, there is a refrain saying, by the utterance of this truth, may there be happiness. So this sutta is what is called truthfulness in speech. Truthfulness is one of the paramis, one of the 10 paramis that bodhisattvas fulfill. And this parami is saying what is true and then wishing for some benefits as a result of saying the truth or saying what is true. And this paritta, this sutta, was delivered by the Buddha in the city of Vaishali. Now the city of Vaishali was a prosperous city, but at one time and there was drought and bad harvest, and so there was famine. When there was famine, at first the poor people died. So there were so many people who died that people were not able to bury or cremate the corpses, and so they were left here and there. When there were corpses like this, when they got rotten, then the non-human beings or the demons came in. And when the demons came in, people suffer from more diseases. So the city of Vaishali was afflicted by three kinds of calamities: famine, and then danger from demons, and also an epidemic of a disease like plague nowadays. Then this was these three dangers were befalling the inhabitants of that city met together and went to their king and said, Your Majesty, this kind of calamity has never befallen us for seven generations of kings. But now, we are suffering from this calamity, so we think, we ask you to examine your conduct. it may be that you, your moral conduct is not pure, and so the country, the city suffered. So the king asked people to examine his conduct. And while the people examined his conduct, they did not find anything wrong with his conduct. So all people met together and tried to find a solution for this problem. And people suggested to bring this person or that person. And then some people said that there was the Buddha living not far away, and if we could bring the Buddha to our city, the calamity might go away. Then some people said, will the Buddha come to us? And then the other people said, the Buddha was a compassionate being, and so when we go to him and invite him, then he will surely come. Then the other said, will the king, King Bimbisara, allow us to bring the Buddha to our city? And then they decided to try. So they sent some princes to Rajagaha. And they went there and first asked permission from Bimbisara, the king, to invite the Buddha. Now the king did not say anything. The king just said, you go to the Buddha himself and invite him. So they went to the Buddha and invited the Buddha to visit their city, and Buddha accepted. So when the Buddha accepted, King Bimbisara prepared for the Buddha's journey. It is said that Rajagaha was about 40 miles from the river Ganges, and the city of Vaishali was about 24 miles from the river Ganges. So the Buddha traveled to the river on foot, and then got on the boat, and Buddha and his 500 monks were carried by boat to where the city Vaishali was. And when Buddha set foot on the bank of the Ganges near Vaishali, the rain fell, and that rain is called a lotus rain. And the peculiar thing about this lotus rain was that only those who wanted to get wet got wet, and not others. That rain was maybe a heavy rain, and so it carried away all the corpses, and it cleansed the air. And so after the rain, the city of Vaishali was clean, and the air was also clean. So the kings and princes of Vaishali went to meet the Buddha at the river, and then brought the Buddha to their city. So when the Buddha reached the gate of the city, Buddha stopped there and taught this discourse to the Venerable Ananda, and told him to chant this sutta around the city of Vaishali. So the Venerable Ananda learned the sutta from the Buddha, and then taking the bowl of the Buddha, filling it with water, and then he went round the city of Vaishali in between the three walls chanting this Rita, and then throwing water here and there. Now, when the Buddha arrived there, the powerful deities also came to that place. And so when Buddha and the deities came, the evil spirits, the demons, dared not stay in the city of Visali, and they all went away. So people got free from the thief and others. So the Venerable Ananda chanted the sutta all through the night, going around the city of Visali in between the three walls. And when Venerable Ananda finished chanting, maybe it was next morning, the people of the city prepared the city hall for the Buddha to preach, and so they brought the Buddha there. And Venerable Ananda also went to the Buddha and sat at one side. Now, at that assembly of all the people of the city went to see the Buddha. So at the assembly also, Buddha delivered this same Ratana Sutta, or the Jiva Discourse. So as a result of the Venerable Ananda's recitation and the Buddha's utterance of the Sutta, the city of Visali became free from all calamities, and so people were happy. When the Venerable Ananda chanted this paritta, he did not simply chant it, but before chanting this paritta, he reflected upon the paramis Buddha had fulfilled, how Buddha fulfilled his paramis, how Buddha had practiced the giving away of his limbs, his eyes, his riches, even his country and his family. And also he reflected upon the important events in the life of the Buddha, such as the Buddha's birth, his renunciation, and his victory over Nara, the evil one, under the Bodhi tree, and his gaining omniscience, and his reaching the first summon, the Wheel of Dharma, and other virtues or attributes of the Buddha. And it is said that he had his mind infused with compassion. Now, it is important that when we chant, or even when we do some meritorious deeds, we need to think about the Buddha, his fulfilling of paramis and so on. And also, what is important here is when we chant, we need to infuse our minds with compassion or loving kindness. There are some conditions to be fulfilled by those who do the chanting, and also by those who listen to the chanting. Now, in order for the chantings to be effective, there are conditions to be fulfilled both by those who chant and by those who listen to the chanting. Now, for those who chant, and those who chant must have learned the chantings correctly and without omission of any word or syllable. That is the first requirement. And the second is those who chant must understand the meaning of the chanting. So they must have done the chanting both in words and in the meaning. And the third is, those who chant must not expect any personal gain or any payment or whatever for the chanting, but they must chant with their hearts filled with loving kindness and compassion. Only when these three conditions are fulfilled by those who chant, is the chanting effective. So it is important that when you chant, you must have landed the syllables correctly, and you must understand the meaning of what you are chanting, and also you must have a pure heart and not expect any personal gain or any payment from the chanting. So you have to make a payment for chanting. I don't think that chanting will be effective. And those who listen to the chanting must also fulfill three requirements. They must be free from three blemishes. And the first one is they must not have committed the five heinous sins, the five wrongdoings that are very grave, and they are killing one's own father, killing one's own mother, killing an arahant, causing the blood to be congealed in the body of the Buddha by wounding him, and causing division in the Sangha. So if a person has committed any one of these sins, it is said that the Pareta, the protective chanting, will not protect him. And the second is, the person must be free from what is called fixed wrong view. And fixed wrong view means a wrong view that denies the efficacy of cause and effect, that denies the law of Dhamma. So if a person is not if a person does not believe in the law of Dhamma, or does not believe in the law of cause and effect, then he will not have any confidence in the chanting, and so the chanting will not protect him. And the third requirement is that he must listen to the chanting with confidence. If he has no confidence and no faith in the chanting or in the person who chants or in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, then the chanting will not protect him. So those who listen to the chanting must listen with confidence in the efficacy of the protective chanting in warding off dangers. So let us go to the soda itself. In addition to being a protective chanting, this soda gives us some useful information about the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. Now, in one verse, it is said, the Magga gives immediate result. From a study of Abhidhamma, we all know that Magga is immediately followed by its fruit, which is called Phala. And in this sutta also, Buddha mentions that the concentration that accompanies that consciousness gives immediate results. Now it is important to understand the Magga giving immediate results as phala or fruit, because if we do not understand this, then we do not understand the one attribute of the Dhamma, which is in Pali, Akalika. Now the word Akalika is translated as timeless or something like that. But actually, the word Akalika here means not timeless, but there is, but it means that there is no time in giving results. That means it gives results immediately, and no amount of time, however small it may be, intervene between the Magga, which is a cause, and the fruit, which is its result. And there is a saying that there are eight kinds of enlightened persons. And in one verse, Buddha mentions that there are eight kinds of individuals, and they constitute four pairs. Now, we understand that there are eight kinds of enlightened individuals, but we don't really know, people don't really know how there are eight individuals, because the eight individuals are those that are at the moment of Magga and at the moment of Phala, at the moment of fruition. And since there are four stages of enlightenment, so there are eight individuals and four pairs. Actually, one and the same person is called a Magga person at the moment of Magga, and Phala person from the moment of Phala until he reaches the next higher stage. Now it is like saying a person is breaking a record. So when he is breaking a record, he is the person who is breaking the record. And a moment after that, he is the person who has broken the record. So there are two persons. We can see there are two Brahmins, the one breaking the record and the other one who has broken the record. So in the same way, one and the same person is called a Magga Brahmin, while at the moment of Magga, and Kala Brahmin, from the moment of Kala until he reaches the next stage. So there are eight individuals and four pairs of enlightened persons. I hope you have heard of a Sotapanna. A Sotapanna is a person who has reached the first stage of enlightenment. And you may also know that a Sotapanna has only seven more rebirths in the round of rebirths. That is, if he does not reach the higher stages immediately. So a Sotapanna has only seven more rebirths, and there is no eighth rebirth for him. And this information we can get from the Ratana Sutta, because here the Buddha said, those who have comprehended the noble truths well taught by him of deep wisdom do not take an eighth rebirth. So a Sotapanna, if any person becomes a Sotapanna, and if he does not practice meditation more to reach the higher stages, then he will be reborn only seven times in the samsara. And in his seventh birth, he will surely become an arahant and make an end of suffering. When a person becomes enlightened, he eradicates some mental defilements. So when a person reaches the first stage of enlightenment, he eradicates three unwholesome states, namely self-illusion, doubt about the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and so on, and belief in wrong habits and practices as a way to purification. So this information also we find in the Ratana Sutta. So some teachings of Abhidhamma are included in this Ratana Sutta. And so by studying the Ratana Sutta, we get much information about these enlightened persons. And have you heard that a Sotapanna will not be reborn in the four willful states? So that information is also given in this sutta. So a person who has become a Sotapanna will not be reborn in the four willful states, or four states of misery, that is, in hell, in animal kingdom, in hungry ghosts, and in the demons called asura. So a person who has reached the first stage of enlightenment, a person who is a Sotapanna, is safe from rebirth in the four woeful states. And also in this order we get the information about the arahants. In Theravada teaching, an arahant is a person who has no more rebirth. So an arahant will not be reborn in any realm or in any existence. And here in this sutta it is said that their past karma is exhausted. There is no arising of fresh karma. Their minds are not attached to a future birth. They have extinguished the seed of becoming. their desire for becoming. Here it is said, their past karma is exhausted. Now that means arahants have done both good and bad karma in the past. And once a person becomes an arahant, then his past karma is exhausted. That means his past karma cannot give him results in future lives, simply because an arahant has no future life. But so long as the arahant is living, then the past karma can give results. And that is why arahants suffer from diseases and so on, and also they enjoy some happiness. So an arahant is one whose karma is exhausted, means whose karma is incapable of giving results in future lives. And there is no arising of fresh karma. After becoming an arahant, a person does not acquire new karma. An arahant may be respectable Buddha, he may do some merit, some dana giving, or he may teach dana to others. But whatever he does, is just doing and does not constitute karma, simply because he has eradicated the roots of existence, which are ignorance and craving. Now craving is compared to moisture. So long as there is moisture, then the seed will grow. When there is no moisture, when the seed is heated up and dried, then the seed cannot grow. In the same way, any person who has no craving, who has no moisture of craving, there can be no karma which gives results. So an arahant is a person who acquire no fresh karma. And Buddha said here that their minds are not attached to a future rebirth. They have extinguished the seed of becoming. And these two statements mean the same thing. They are not attached to a future rebirth. That means they have no attachment or no craving for future rebirth. And since they have no attachment or craving for future birth, they have extinguished the seed of becoming. So, according to the teachings of Theravada, arahants will never be reborn. There is no more rebirth after death. So arahants will not become Buddhas in any way. So once a person becomes an arahant, and he will die as an arahant, and there is no more rebirth for him, and so there is no occasion for him to become a Buddha. Then what happens when an arahant dies? The Buddha says here, the wise ones go out even as this lamp burns out. The commentary says that the lamps were burning at the city hall where Buddha preached his sutta. And when the Buddha was uttering this verse, one of the lamps burned out. And so Buddha said, just as this lamp burns out, these wise ones, that means these arahants, go out. Now when a lamp goes out. We cannot say that where it goes, or whether it is still there or not. In the same way, when an arahant dies, he just dies and disappears. And there is, since there is no more rebirth for him, we cannot say he goes to this place or to that place or to this existence or to that existence. So, when an arahant dies, he just dies and disappears as a lamp burns out. So when there is fuel, the lamp will burn. But when fuel is exhausted, it will burn out or it will go out. In the same way, arahants have eradicated craving for a future birth, or craving in general. Since they have no craving, which is like a fuel, there is no more rebirth for them, and so like a lamp goes out, these arahants go out when they die. In one of the suttas, it is said that we should not ask about what happened to the arahant after his death, and also we are not to say that arahant is destroyed after his death or something like that, because the correct answer should be, since there are no causes, then the effects do not appear. Because in ultimate sense, there is no man, no person, no arahant, whatever. And so we cannot say that arahant is no more after his death and so on. But we attempted to talk about the arahants after their death. So when we say when an arahant dies, he dies, he goes out, and he is no more, we are using the conventional time. So in the ultimate sense, there is no arahant, no Buddha or nothing, just mind and matter or five aggregates. Now let me read just one verse from this Parita. Whatever treasure there be, either here or in the worlds beyond, or whatever precious jewel is in the world of the deities, there is none equal to the Tathagata or the Buddha. In the Buddha is this precious jewel. By this utterance of truth, may there be happiness. So even if you cannot memorize all 11 suttas, I think it is good to memorize just this one sutta and chant it every day. Because it is the asseveration of truth, and so it will be effective. The practice of satipatthana vipassana. Now there are some basic requirements for the practice of foundations of mindfulness or for the practice of vipassana meditation. Once a monk approached the Buddha and asked the Buddha to explain to him the teaching in brief, so that after hearing the instruction, he might live alone, secluded, earnest, and resolute. That means he might practice meditation. And the Buddha's reply was, well, we should first purify the beginning of all wholesome things. And what is the beginning of all things wholesome? Sila that has been well purified, and a view that is straight. When your sila is very pure and your view straight, then supported and aided by sila, you may cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness. In this discourse, Buddha taught us two basic requirements for the practice of four foundations of mindfulness. And the first of them is sila, which is well purified. Now, purification of sila, or purity of moral conduct, is very important in the teachings of the Buddha, and it is very important that those who practice the foundations of mindfulness or vipassana meditation should acquire. Because without the purity of sila or moral conduct, we cannot hope to get concentration. And without concentration, there can be no penetration into the nature of things, or no understanding of the true nature of things. So a purified sila is a basic requirement for the practice of four foundations of mindfulness. For lay people, purification of sila means taking five precepts, or eight precepts, or 10 precepts. So if a person keeps five precepts, then he has this basic, the first basic requirement for practice of foundations of mindfulness. But at our retreats, yogis are instructed to keep eight precepts. And that is because eight precepts are better than five precepts. And you purify your mind more by taking eight precepts. And also, since eight precepts involve not eating in the afternoon, you get more time for practice of meditation. Question here is, how long must a person be purified in sila before he or she practices vipassana, vipassana meditation or foundations of mindfulness? Now, the longer you have the purity of sila, the better. And and the purity of sila is always emphasized in the teachings of the Buddha. But when we look at the stories that happened during the time of the Buddha, we come to the conclusion that even if a person is not purified in sila before he practices meditation, if his sila is pure when he practices meditation, that is enough. Now, there are many stories to support this. I'll give you only one story. There was a man who was fishing, and his name was Mr. Pure. So Buddha went to him and asked him, what he was doing, and he was fishing, and what his name was, and he said, "My name is Mr. Pure." So Buddha said, "A person who injures other beings is not called Mr. Pure." So a person, only a person who does not inflict injury to others, is called Nitya Pure. So, and at the end of that teaching, that person became a Sotapanna. So, until he met the Buddha, or until Buddha went to see him, his sila was not pure. He was fishing. But when he met the Buddha, and Buddha taught to him, and hearing the teaching of the Buddha, he must have made up his mind to give up fishing and to purify his sila. So, basing on that purified sila for a very short duration, he must have practiced vipassana meditation and he attained sotapannahood. So, if your sila was not pure in the past, do not be remorseful about that. What is important is for your moral conduct to be pure, say, when you are practicing meditation. So, and in order to purify your moral conduct, you take precepts and keep them. So long as you keep these precepts, your moral conduct is pure, and you have fulfilled the first basic requirement for the practice of foundations of mindfulness and vipassana meditation. Now, I say this not to encourage you to be careless and moral purity, but to let you know that even if your moral conduct was not pure in the past, if you make up your mind right now to keep the precepts and then take the precepts and keep them, then you can practice foundations of mindfulness or vipassana meditation and enjoy the benefits of the practice. So I don't want you to lose this opportunity to practice meditation and enjoy the benefits simply because your moral conduct was not pure in the past. Now, the second basic requirement is a view that is straight. Now, a view that is straight means understanding of the law of karma. Understanding that beings have karma as their own property. Now, a belief in karma or the law of cause and effect is important, because if you do not believe in cause and effect, if you do not believe that the practice of meditation can give you results, then you will not practice at all. So you need to have a view or an understanding that when there is cause, there is effect, and also when there is karma, there is a result of karma. So a belief or an a belief in or an understanding of the law of karma and the law of cause and effect is the second basic requirement for the practice of foundations of mindfulness. So, as the Buddha said, supported and aided by pure sila, may you cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness and enjoy the benefits thereof. Thank you.